Hello, Texans, and welcome to the program that gets you inside NRG Stadium. Mark Vandermeer with you, joined by DP Sidhu tonight, as we'll have Tavier Thomas on the show, and we'll have thoughts on the picks from guys who know them best, experts who covered these draft choices when they were college players. Looking forward to hearing a whole bunch of that. Right now, let's start with DP. We were out there on the practice field today for OTAs, and it felt good.
It felt great. The weather was amazing. This, you and I were talking about this. This might be the earliest that we've ever been out there. Although I do think that one year we had some sort of mini camp that was the week of the draft under Bill O'Brien.
It wasn't rookie camp.
It was one of those. Maybe it was the first year he was coaching. You could have an extra. Mini camp.
I remember that. It was the week of the draft. You're right. I don't think we've been out there this early for a long time.
Right.
First year franchise history. Yes. New team, new coach, all that, and different rules. I mean, that was two CBAs ago. But yeah, this was early, and it was such a breath of fresh air. A nice surprise, really, to be out there watching the guys doing their thing. Usually you're waiting till, I don't know, a couple of weeks after the draft to get out there. This is a new coach setup, of course. The Texans are a little bit ahead of everybody else. And it just felt refreshing. That's the best word I can say. To see the team on the field, because we can see the roster any time we want. We know some of the signings in free agency. We know that the draft is coming. But, hey, they got a squad out there working out, getting ready for 2022. It was nice.
I think with COVID the last 2 years as well, we haven't really seen. It's been a weird offseason program. But what I thought was really interesting was seeing Lovie Smith watching the offense at work. Because he was over with the defense, and you just sort of forget that, like, Lovey is going to be watching the offense and the defense. Mm-hmm. And then we saw Pep Hamilton running the drills, vocal. Like, I have not seen a vocal Pep Hamilton out at practice before. Because now he's the offensive coordinator. That was kind of cool to see, too, as well as all the new assistant coaches that were out there.
That's a great point about Pep. That's a good takeaway. Because we've heard him before, but not this much.
Mm-hmm.
He's coaching the entire offense. And look, we're just watching some drills here. Not even the full setup and install and everything like that. So to hear him be so involved was very cool. Davis Mills, I heard some people say Davis Mills looked sharp. Look, Davis Mills looked sharp, but you're throwing on air and everything. You're in shorts. Okay, let's not send him to Canton yet. But it was nice first day out there that we saw. I thought all the quarterbacks looked pretty good. Driscoll looked pretty accurate today. I mean, they had a bunch of drills they were running with the receivers, with the running backs, just trying to get that crispness you need to execute football plays. All right, I'm going to give you a takeaway here. And I'm just going to go in no particular order.
Okay.
Philip Dorsett, I know he's on the football team, and he's out there wearing number four, which is
just
notable.
And a hoodie. It's like a hoodie and four, and I had to do a double take. Good thing we had a roster with numbers out there.
But I like that Philip Dorsett is on this football team. Had a couple of big catches last year and got hurt. He's one of those, if he could only stay healthy, guys. And I know there are a lot of players like that in football. It's not a moral or ethical issue. A lot of guys put the time in, rehab, recover. But they have bad luck, and I hope he has really good luck this year because I think he can help. I'm not saying he's going to the Pro Bowl or anything, but he can help this attack.
All right, I'll go Marlon Mack wearing number two, Ingram's old number. I was very curious to see him out there, and, you know, I mean, it's obvious, like you're saying, they're just out there in shorts. But I just think that the running back room, I mean, it's going to need an overhaul. It has had an overhaul. We had Rex Burkhead re-sign, but it's kind of interesting to see Marlon Mack as another veteran in that backfield. You know, we saw what he could do with the Colts. So I'm very curious and intrigued to see how he sort of fits into this puzzle that's going to be the running game, because we heard Tytus Howard talk about it earlier. I mean, they're putting an emphasis on the run game and running the ball better. I know we heard that last year, but this year you've got a new coaching staff in place. You're going to get some new pieces in the draft. And let's see how they get it off the ground this year.
I'll go back to Mills. Mills as the man, right? Last year, Mills, a rookie. Mills learning his way. We didn't see a whole lot of OTAs, like you said, because that was, I call that the soft COVID year. 2 years ago was the hard COVID year when everything was wiped out in the offseason up until training camp. But this year feels more normal. And just to see Mills out there as the starter, there's nowhere else to go. Now, Kyle Allen has started games in this league, started a good one against the Texans, actually, in 2019. But we all know Mills is the guy. You do have the insurance policy in Allen, and I don't know what you're going to get out of Driscoll, but he started games in this league as well. But there's no Tyrod Taylor. There's no elder statesman here, really, above Davis. Davis is the guy. And it's neat to see it that way and see the kind of command he has out there with his teammates. Now, again, you're in April still here. We got a long way to go, but this is all you got right now. This is what we're going to evaluate.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot to take in, and Lovie Smith talked about having a cheat sheet of everyone's numbers out there, because I feel like even though there's a lot of guys that are returning from last year, it's still quite a few new players, mm-hmm. and then you got players that have changed numbers like Philip Dorsett. So I'm very curious to see how the puzzle pieces come together, but I'm super excited to see when the draft picks get here, because there are going to be a lot more of them. And Nick Caserio said it too, that this year's team is going to be really dependent on some of these younger guys and some of these drafted players.
Yeah, there's a lot of excitement. Thursday night, Miller Outdoor Theater, that's where the draft party is. Mm-hmm. HoustonTexans.com and the Texans app has info on that. And, of course, we'll be live all weekend long with every pick. You're going to interview players as they're picked. We're going to hear that on Sports Radio 610 Texans Radio, the Texans app. And you'll also be able to see it later on social, digital media. So we've got the whole thing covered. Drew is already in Vegas, right? He's already out there in Vegas as he's covering the first round. Now, previous years, many of them, we wouldn't go out to Vegas or wherever the draft would be held because didn't have a first-round pick. Now you have 3-13. You've interviewed a lot of people who have covered these draft choices. And does it give you any more of an idea of who the Texans might want at number 3? I know number 13 is more difficult to predict here, but everybody's in the prediction business right now, DP. How has it been for you? Because I know everywhere you go, people are asking you, who are they going to take? So what do you say? What do you tell people when they ask?
You know, I think after talking to the beat reporters, I'm actually more confused about who the Texans are going to take, because you see the – I think when you're looking at it from like 10,000 feet, You have your opinions of who you like and who you don't like. But when you talk to all these different beat reporters who've covered these players day in and day out, you can see the merits and you can sort of make the argument for any one of these players. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, there's no way they're going to take an offensive lineman. They've got Laremy Tunsil. They've got Titus Howard. You know, they don't need a tackle. But then you talk to some of these beat reporters about the tackles in this draft class and how they could kick inside for the first year. Then you could move them out. And then, you know, you start sort of grooming them to be a starter eventually on the O-line. Or you look at the secondary. You think, oh, there's no way the Texans were going to take a lockdown corner in this Lovie Smith defense. But then you hear about the merits of Sauce Gardner, and you see what Derek Stingley did at his pro day. And you think, okay, well, I could see that too. I mean, it just – there's a case for any one of these positions. And I love watching on Twitter what the analysts are saying, the betting analysts. Mm-hmm. Because it keeps changing. No one has any clue who their Texans – this reminds me so much of 2014. When the Texans had the number one pick. Do you remember? Like, now it seems like, of course, they were going to take Clowney. But it was not that clear, even on the day of the draft, who the Texans were going to take.
Well, and we were used to the last time before that they had the number one pick, which was, all right, you're going to take Reggie Bush for sure.
And then it's definitely not Reggie Bush.
Yeah, the night before the draft, you find out it's Mario Williams. And I'm not saying we're going to have something like that here with the Jaguars, although the Jaguars – all right, so what you just said about the Texans at number one in 2014 – the Jags have that now. You know, is it Trayvon Walker? Is it Aiden Hutchinson? Do they take one of the tackles? Who's it going to be? A lot of unpredictability there. And then there was this assumption that the Lions would definitely take Hutchinson, but now it seems like, well, Walker's too good a prospect to pass up. But wait a minute. They could possibly use some O-line help. Why not? What about Sauce Gardner? Everybody wants him. Or Stingley, because he's better, even though he hasn't played much since 2019. Again, you're just stirring the pot here, not you, but everybody, with confusion. But that's what makes the draft fun. And by the mm-hmm. time these names come off the board on Thursday, we're going to say, oh, yeah, of course.
Of course that's who they're going to take. I don't know. I just feel like everyone, it seems like now everyone's saying Hutchinson is the number one overall. Mm-hmm. Like, I would be surprised if he didn't go number one overall.
Oh, but I'm not going to be that surprised.
But you know what? We've been surprised before, so I could see the Jaguars deciding to get cute and do something completely different from what everyone expects. But I think that Nick Caserio and Lovie Smith, it's always such a smoke screen who the Texans are going to take. I felt like, was it last week or the week before where Lovie said, we can't play the sort of defense we want to play without improving at the cornerback position?
Yes, and then today... today was the D-line, right?
I was like, what are... Okay, now I'm really confused.
Yeah. Well, and Seth went nuts. Seth Payne tweeted all of the picks with the Bears, or many of them, when Lovie was there. I don't have it in front of me, but D-line, D-line, D-line. The majority were D-linemen. And look, the Bears were really good on defense for the better part of Lovie's tenure there. And I'd love to be great on defense. That's awesome. So maybe that happens here. Maybe it's automatically a D lineman? No, you can't say that. You don't know. But
No. A
lot of people are reading into that, what he said today. And maybe he's just having fun because Lovie's the kind of guy, DP,
yes,
who would do it. He's probably thinking, because, you know, he's
What if they do all this and they're going to take like a tackle, an offensive tackle?
We have stuff on the cutting room floor from when he's mic'd up that we're not going to put out there on social media, but he likes to have a good time sometimes and clown around. So
he knows exactly what he's doing. He's not letting anything slip by mistake. And I think the other day, was it this morning, they were playing in the morning a cut from Nick saying, however many players we draft in the first round, they were trying to read into that.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I mean, to me, that's him just basically saying player or players.
We're open for business.
Like, we could take one or we could take two. Or, I mean, what, or three, I guess. What, I don't understand why that is a surprise, because we know. I think that's the one thing that Nick Cassero has been very forthright about, is that we are going to trade these pick, this number three pick or the 13 or both if
open
we can.
Open for business.
But the number three pick, there are not a lot of askers right now. So we're probably going to trade the number 13 pick if we get some askers there. So I thought, what's the surprise there? I think he's been actually quite forthright about that.
He's announcing to the world they're willing to do it. The question is, for who? For what? And who wants to move up, and for what player? Because you just don't know until you get there, right? The player you really want might have been grabbed at 12. And I don't know. There are so many different ways for it to play out. Now, to me, Lovie saying, he said that about the D linemen. He also said, regarding Titus Howard, he will be on the field, because he was asked point blank, is he a left tackle? I mean, is he a tackle or is he a guard? And he basically said, yes, he's going to be on the field, but he wouldn't commit to what position he would be playing. Now, is this a smokescreen? Is it real? Is it both? What is it? Because does it make people think, oh, the Texans are definitely interested in a tackle? Or maybe they are, maybe they're not. We got to move up to two to grab Icky and make a deal with Detroit. So, and then so-and-so's left over, either Walker or Hutchinson or whoever might be. I don't know. It's more confusing than ever. But I think this is how I feel on Tuesday heading into the draft. Take who you think is best, the best available player at whatever position of need you have. In other words, you're not going to take Malik Willis at number three. And Sean Pendergast worded this really well the other day. If the best corner is on the board and the number two offensive lineman is on the board, doesn't mean you take the best corner, even though you might be looking at a corner, because he might not be nearly as good a football player as the number two O-lineman, right? Just because you're number one in your class, the class might not be that good. I'm not saying this particularly about corner, but that could play out at certain position groups, so you never know what they're thinking.
I kind of like taking a variety of positions, and I really want to see. I mean, I said this a while back. I really like Sauce Gardner because he wears the necklace with the sauce, and I feel like we got to look at entertainment value sometimes too, Mark.
I agree.
I mean, you can take two offensive linemen. No offense to offensive linemen, but it'd be nice to have someone with a little bit of swag.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Icky has it, though. It seems like he's
got an O-lineman.
For an O-lineman, Icky Ekwonu's got a little bit of swag. So.
All right, well, let me ask you this.
Yes.
So we had a few DBs with some swag here over the years, right? DJ Swag, as a matter of fact, was here.
I was like, were you going to really go there?
Yeah, I was going to go there.
Yeah, okay.
But I do like it as well. And people have questioned, well, what do you think of the nickname Sauce? He's had it forever, first of all. It's not like they just gave it to him in college.
Well, let me just say, in interviewing and finding out more about Sauce Gardner, I thought the same thing. He's, you know, your prototypical cornerback, just super swaggy, has a lot of attitude. But just in learning more about him, I mean, they say that he has that on the outside, but he just has a really good work ethic. Doesn't drink, doesn't smoke. It is not on the sauce for someone who's nicknamed Sauce.
Right.
He is very disciplined in his body and how he is. And he was like sixth on the depth chart when he started, and then worked his way up and then became Sauce.
Yeah, so there
sauce.
It is. He's worked for it. He's worked
for
whatever he got.
Had a great play, moved his way up.
What's wrong with
not
the nickname?
Not six. He was somewhere on the depth chart. Don't quote me on that, but I feel like, you know, he wanted to be called Sauce when he stepped on the field. He didn't until he earned it. He had like a big play in a big game, and then they started calling him Sauce. But I feel like I kind of like that. I kind of like that he played for Cincinnati. A lot of people think that, hey, you know, that's not the SEC, but Cincinnati was in the playoffs. He played against SEC level competition.
Yes. And look, they got everybody.
How did I get into making a case for Sauce Gardner in this whole segment?
You're now Sauce's agent.
Now I'm Sauce's agent. So
well,
I know nothing, but hey, I wouldn't be mad.
One thing about Cincinnati is they get everybody's best game. It's not like they're sneaking up on anybody in their league or in the country. and he's played in some big games, so he's got big game experience, if that's important to you. Because Sauce could have played for a smaller school, and if he could run like the wind and make plays, you'd say, all right, not quite the level of competition, but there are a lot of raw skills there. Johnny talks about all these guys in the corner at Sam Houston State who had the best combine athletic performance in the history of the event. Maybe he doesn't show up in the first round. We'll see.
That would be great in some of the later rounds. We saw him here at the Battle of the Piney Woods.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's some local kids that might really surprise us in the later rounds. I think running back is really intriguing. Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus. I asked him, you know, when would be a good round to sort of target a running back? Because the Texans' run game has really struggled in the last few years. He said not before the fourth round.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. That seems kind of late, Mike Renner, but we'll see what happens with running backs in the Texans. They don't generally draft running backs.
Well, they're going
to. It's been
a while. I bet they take
one. This might be the year they do it.
Maybe
third.
Yeah, and I hope there's not too much on the guy. I hope the guy's awesome. I hope the guy turns out to be, you know, Walter Payton. But we'll see. I do like that they brought in Mac. Obviously, you need Mac to stay healthy. Mac still got some juice. There's no doubt about that. And I still want to see what Scotty Phillips can do if he stays healthy. Boy, I have a lot of that going around, don't I? and they have some other guys who can help, no doubt. But those two in particular intrigue me of who's on the roster right now. Mm-hmm. Then you draft somebody and maybe an undrafted free agent. That's going to be a lot of running backs. I mean, they have a big running back room already.
Said that last year.
I know.
We said that last year, Mark.
Because I thought last year, well, one of these guys is bound to work out, one or two. Didn't really happen that way. You know, they all had flashes. Burkhead had flashes, no doubt. There were some other moments. The first game, I thought, okay, Ingram looking pretty good. They ran that wild Ingram as well. That was cool. Lindsey got in the act. David Johnson got in the act. They all did something in the opening game against Jacksonville, but it kind of went downhill from there as far as run game production. So I just want to see what they can do with that. But back to the corner situation, you have Stingley, who hasn't done much since 2019. You have Sauce, who has the nickname. Look, Primetime had a nickname. Worked out pretty well for him. I'm not comparing Sauce to Primetime, but that's not exactly something to eliminate him from consideration. And nobody's talking about Kyle Hamilton anymore since the pro day slow time, however you want to describe it. But that is still a very intriguing player to me as well. Maybe at 13, I don't know, his stock has dropped. Hey, if you love him more than everybody else, you think he's going to be a great leader in your secondary, make plays, and just be the backbone you need back there. I know it's cover two. It's a little bit different, but he can certainly help. Take him. If that's the guy you want, take him.
But why? What if the Texans trade back from 13 and they're picking like 19, 20, somewhere around there?
Is Hamilton dropping that much?
Do you think Hamilton is still around? I mean, I was looking at the stats for safeties taken in the first round. It's like sub 5%.
Right.
It's super low. Like, I would say 4%. It does not happen. So maybe teams are like, they like Kyle Hamilton a lot, but not a great pro day performance. Plus, you're sort of hesitant to take a safety with your first round pick. Maybe he does slide a little bit. And then that's a bargain for you.
It looks like it. It looks like
it. So maybe there's a way to make it all work, but you don't have to reach for him at number three.
How many players through all these mocks and everything have been jammed into the top 10, right? It's like Dick Vitale's NCAA tournament field with 100 teams making it. Yeah, they probably have 20 players. So players are going to drop on Thursday. Two, three names are going to drop. Teams are going to have a shot at them. Some teams will try to trade up maybe late in the first round and get them, maybe two-thirds of the way through the first round and get them. It's going to be fun, drama. We'll have it all for you covered. You had a chance to catch up with Tavier Thomas after practice, and he's always interesting to hear from. Nickel corner, who had a good year last year.
Tavier, it's first day that you guys were out there with coaches. We heard Lovie Smith talk about it earlier, that it was a great feeling to be out there with the players. How about for yourself? You guys have been getting some work in, but what is this offseason being out there on the practice field with your teammates? What's that like for you?
It was great. Just meeting all the new guys on offense and defense, just everybody coming together, and we got a lot of guys out there. And as many people as here, like, we're getting the work in. And as long as we continue to come and be out there with the coaches, we're going to learn and continue to get better each and every day.
A year ago, you were one of those new faces. So now you're second year with the Texans. Mm-hmm. Does it feel like a lot different than it was where you were a year ago? I imagine last year, your head's probably still sort of spinning. You're getting used to moving back to Houston. How much more comfortable are you this year? I know things are changing on the defensive side. There's some new coaches in place, but how about for you personally? How different is this year from last year for you?
Personally, it's I love it now. Like, I'm comfortable now, like, with my teammates and then all the coaches with Lovie and Dino. This is the first year that I'm coming back in the same defense, in the football aspect, this is the first year of my 5 years I have the same defense coordinator and same defensive back coach. So that's great with that. And then at home, like, the family is all good and comfortable. So we getting everybody down here, and we love it down here. So hopefully I'm staying here for the long run.
Yeah, that would be nice. I know last year when you signed on, Lovie Smith was defensive coordinator. Now he's the head coach. I imagine that's got to be pretty special for you, because you had talked to us about it last year, how you really worked a lot one-on-one with Lovie, just as your nickel coach. So what was it like for you hearing that he was the head coach, and how does that change your relationship with him on the defense?
It was amazing. Like, when I first seen it, like, his potential, he can be the head coach, I was happy. I called him. I'm like, I'm praying for you. Like, prayer works. And then the next day, told him, like, they put it out that he was the head coach. So I was super happy. Like, me and him got a personal relationship and a football relationship. So with him, me and him just going to continue getting better with our relationship. And the sky's the limit.
How much did that relationship with him really help you out last year? I mean, you had a pick six, you had an interception. I mean, you were playing some really meaningful snaps towards the back end of the season. How much of that would you say was just based on that relationship with Lovie, and how much work you got in with him?
It was a lot. It had a lot to do with it, because me and him, he taught me everything. And he was like one of the first coaches that actually believed in me to play defense, even though I love special teams. Like, Lovie gave me my chance on defense, and he just told me what to do. And if I do it this way every time, that I will continue to get better. And I listened to everything he said, and I continue to get better. And hopefully I'm even better this year. So
we've got the NFL draft coming up. I know you were undrafted out of 2018. But when you sort of look back at your career and just how much you really grew last year, I mean, what do you think about just your journey in the NFL just these past 5 years?
It just feels like I'm back in college all over again, starting as a freshman. When you come into the NFL, you got to start and work your way up, no matter what round you're drafted in. Just work and just continue to get better and learn from the older guys. And that's what I did each and every year. And when my opportunity came, I took off. So hopefully I continue taking off.
Yeah, it's funny. You're back here for a second year. Lovie talked about all the new faces. You talked about all the new faces. But a couple of familiar faces coming back to the Texans. The defense gets some guys back. Mm-hmm. Malik Collins, Kamu Grugier-Hill, Christian Kirksey. And your guy, Desmond King, a guy that you grew up with. Both of you are back together again. You know, what do you think about seeing some of the guys that you had joined here the Texans with sort of come back for a second year? And what you guys were able to do last year, I mean, how much do you really feel like you can build on some of that? And what do you hope to do differently this year?
I feel like we get a second chance at life for a lot of us. Like, a lot of guys signed 1 or 2 years this coming back or whatnot. I was on 2 year. So I feel like with all us coming back, we can build off of what we ended towards. Like, we were playing really good defense. So if we can continue to build off of that, then the sky's the limit. Like I always say, the sky's the limit.
Sky's the limit.
Yeah, so, yeah.
How about you? How about for off-season workouts? I know you guys can't really do a lot of hitting or stuff like that just yet. You know, no TAs, you'll have some more team stuff. But what about for you personally? Like, this time of year, what do you want to work on, and how do you get better?
Just my man progressions and watching film, learning route combinations. Because last year was my first year ever, like, actually watching defensive film. So with me learning that with Lovie, like, he taught me well how to watch defense and watch plays and whatnot. With just man progression and learning route combination and communicating better without the whole team. So as long as I continue to do that, I feel like I'm continue to get better.
And what about when you're off on your own? You got any big plans for the off season? I know you'll get a little bit of time off after the off season program, but what about like workouts? And you know, what do you do when you're away from the facility? You have anything special planned? Sometimes guys change up their workouts, their diet. Do you have any big plans for yourself?
So for me, I'm trying to stop eating a lot of snacks. So I'm trying to get into different. I'm trying to get into like different what's it called? Like different foods or whatnot. Like, we don't eat pork no more or beef, so we're trying to get into the fish and chicken world.
Oh, okay.
So we're trying to do that and just continue to work at my body and be up here with Mike. Mike and those guys are getting me right together and keeping my body healthy, so love it.
All right. Better diet and back out here with the Texans. Tavi, you're always a pleasure. Can't wait to see more of you here in your second year with the Texans.
Thank you.
There's DP Sidhu with Tavier Thomas. Coming up, writers from around the country who cover the top prospects. Quick sound bites, Texans audio jukebox, what these writers think of these players. This gets you ready for Thursday in a big, big way. Let's hear it next on Texans Radio. All right, Texans, great to have you listening on a Tuesday night here to Texans Radio with the NFL Draft 48 hours away. Did I say that? My goodness. Well, that's a little over 48 hours away, but who's counting? It's going to be awesome on Thursday night. We're going to get to money quotes from writers who cover the top prospects in this draft. Great way to learn about the draft. That's all coming up. Earlier today at NRG Stadium, we mentioned practice. Great to see the team working out, doing their thing, getting ready for 2022. And obviously that roster will get a lot of additions over the next weekend and maybe some free agents along the way as well. And who knows, maybe a trade or two. But in the press box today, and we'll talk more about this as the week continues, John McClain was honored by the Texans with the John McClain Media Wall of Fame. He's the first one in. It's named after him. No one could be more suited to have the Media Wall of Fame named after him, as McClain, to me, is the most beloved and most influential sports media figure in the history of this city. And I've had this debate with a few of the old-timers, or discussion, it's not really a debate, and there's a lot of agreement here. I don't think you can come up with anybody else who is higher in that regard than John McClain. To me, he's the man. Anyway, let's get to this, and congratulations, General. We'll talk more about that as the week continues and into next week, I am sure. But let's get to this as media members around the country discuss these prospects. Let's go to Aiden Hutchinson, who might be the number one pick in the draft. We don't know. The edge player for the University of Michigan. Isaiah Hull covers U of M for USA Today. He also hosts the On Wolverines podcast, and he had this to say about Hutchinson.
He's got the motor. He's got the physical tools. A lot of times people would look at someone like him and say, well, he's just gritty. No, he's just as talented. He's not just outworking everybody. He is outworking everybody, but he is just as physically talented as anybody out there who plays the edge rusher or defensive end position. So whoever gets him is going to really get a complete package, because he's got the personal aspect. He's got the physical tools, everything you really kind of want. Michigan wouldn't have been Big Ten champions. Michigan wouldn't have gone to the college football playoff semifinals if it wasn't for Aiden Hutchinson. He's the glue guy. He's the guy that gets everyone hyped, everyone fed off of him.
When asked about what was the game that really sent it over the top for Hutchinson, Isaiah Hull said it was the Buckeye game. A lot of people thought that game might derail Hutchinson's hype, but it did nothing of the sort.
I just remember reading a lot of the stuff that my colleagues down there were saying, as they thought that Aiden was going to be rendered essentially moot by what they thought was an incredible offensive line. They were saying this is like the best offensive line Ohio State's had since their 2014 national championship game. And he goes out there and has three sacks, and all at very crucial moments. I mean, that's the big rival. I mean, he didn't shy away from, you know, talking about it being the big rivalry. And he went into that week saying, we're not scared of them. You know, we're not going to bow down to them. None of that. And then he went out there and did exactly kind of what he said. And ultimately, Ohio State's offensive line coach got fired. I mean, they were talking a couple weeks, you know, not even a couple weeks, a week before the game, the whole week of the game.
Wow.
That was a strength, that was not going to be an issue, that they were going to neutralize Aiden Hutchinson. Three sacks later, their offensive line coach is looking for a new job. I mean, that tells you a lot about his ability, his production.
And what about David Ojabo? Also getting a lot of pub out of Ann Arbor as a good player trying to get into the backfield.
He's just incredibly athletic. You know, his flexibility is top notch. So his ability to kind of bend at the waist and get low and get around the edge is, you know, unlike anything I've really seen before covering a player day to day.
Let's move on now to Kayvon Thibodeau. I'm not going in order of the Harris 100 or anybody's particular rankings, but Kayvon Thibodeau, a much discussed player entering this draft. Beat reporter Rob Mosley, who covers Ducks football for GoDucks.com, had this to say about Thibodeau.
KT, there may not be an equal to him in terms of a guy with that ability off the edge, that kind of explosive athleticism off the edge. I remember against Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl, you know, a couple years ago, you know, he moved inside and was taking on, you know, a Big Ten center and winning battles at the line of scrimmage. So he really showed at different times that he could do a little bit of everything when asked. if you turn on the film, you see him come through play after play after play, and you see the attention he commands again from opposing offenses in terms of the way they, you know, their blocking schemes direct attention to him.
There are some thoughts on Thibodeau. Now let's talk about Kyle Hamilton. Some people had him number one in their mock drafts early. The stock dropped to the pundits, to the media, after a slower than expected 40 time at his pro day. But he's got a lot of range, a lot of positives here for the safety from Notre Dame. Pete Sampson, who covers the Irish for The Athletic, had these thoughts on Kyle Hamilton.
I think he almost allows you to play 11 and a half on 11 defensively. And this is something that I think Hamilton's potential has yet to be unlocked. You can make him whatever you want to make him at the next level. And that I think is going to be fascinating to see wherever he goes. How do you maximize a guy like this? His first snap in Notre Dame Stadium was a pick six.
Wow.
That was the second game of his career. And it wasn't like he made an amazing play. It was the ball got deflected from a defensive end and it came right to him. But like at some point you're like, wait a minute, why does the ball always seem to come right to you? He's just in the right place at the right time. In addition to being a great athlete. So if you want a versatile safety who ups your turnover rate, like this is the guy.
All right, let's go back to the offense after those thoughts on Kyle Hamilton. Evan Neal, you've heard a ton about him from the Crimson Tide. What about Charlie Potter, who covers Bama for Bama Online and 24/7 Sports? Potter on Neal, the tackle.
Alabama, a lot of the times, they didn't want to tip their hand and say, hey, we're going to run it to the left every time. But it was a good bet that Brian Robinson and these running backs that Alabama had were going to run off of Evan Neal's left or right hip. Coming in as a true freshman, you guys don't really start a lot as freshmen at Alabama. I mean, it's notable when it happens. Guys like, you know, Andre Smith has done it, Cam Robinson, who's with the Jaguars, Jonah Williams, who's left tackle for the Bengals and played in the Super Bowl this year. But the list isn't very long. And so for him to come in and nab a spot at left guard in 2019 on an offensive line with a lot of big names, you know, says a lot. Everything I've gathered is he's just a guy that players like to be around. Again, he stepped into a leadership role this year, and he's probably a little more quiet, but you know, he has a deep voice, and when he speaks, people listen. I think that's a reason why they voted him as a team captain this year.
And I know he had some more to say after that, but these are sound bites, and sometimes you have to cut them short. And sometimes sound bites don't really end the way you'd want them to, but that was Potter on Evan Neal. Another tackle getting a lot of pre-draft pub. Ikem Ekwonu, you've heard of him. David Thompson, boy, that's a famous name in NC State history. David Thompson, NC State Athletics for USA Today, has this to say about Ikem Ekwonu.
You know, I've talked to him a lot off the field, and he's just like the gentlest, sweetest, funny guy, you know, likes to prank his roommates. But when he gets on the field, and I think you see this with the top prospects, the best guys in the league, like it's a switch that flips, right? And he just kind of likes to, I don't want to say hurt people, but he likes to put people on the ground. His big thing at NC State was pancakes. And after every pancake, the coaching staff would give him a bottle of syrup. And I think he left with 120, I mean, it was a ridiculous amount of syrup. There's the intangibles, right? The size, the stuff that you can't coach. But I think his mental fortitude, as well as his quickness and strength, is just going to make him, you know, one of those potential 10 to 12 year Pro Bowl guys that are really kind of a foundation of an offensive line and potentially a team like the Texans that are really trying to rebuild from the ground up.
All right, maybe not the ground up. Geez, a little more going on here than that, but I get it. We're getting the writers from out of town who want to focus on their prospects. And the next one is Derek Stingley. A lot of talk about him. I heard people talking themselves into him being the number one overall pick in this draft. Hey, you never know. Is anything going to surprise you that much among any of these prospects on Thursday night? I don't think so. But let's get to this. The LSU product did a whole lot of good work in 2019. Since then, it's slowed down a bit. So let's hear from a reporter who knows. Tyler Natuno from USA Today also writes for LSU Tigers Wire what he thinks of Derek Stingley Jr.
He's a guy that came in as a true freshman, was a five-star recruit, started every game for LSU and during that national title run. And I mean, he had some absolutely unreal production that year. I mean, 6 interceptions and 15 pass breakups, I believe, for a true freshman in the SEC. pretty unbelievable. And as much, you know, as much talk as that offense gets with Joe Burrow, you know, the defense and Derek Stingley's play was a big part of that team's success. He really does have everything you look for in a corner. You just hope that he can develop, you know, become a more consistent all around player, because in terms of coverage, I mean, I think you'd be hard pressed to find a better coverage corner in this draft. I don't think there's really anyone that, as good as some of the other prospects are, I don't know if there's anyone that's just quite as talented as he is across the board there.
I know you've been hearing a lot about Trayvon Walker might be the number one pick. Well, I've said that about a lot of guys, right? Well, J.C. Shelton, who writes for UGA Wire and hosts the UGA Football Live podcast, talked about Walker to DP Sidhu.
He's the number one Georgia defender as far as defensive line and playing time this year. 56% of his plays, he was on the field for the defense, which is tops the defensive line. He led the team 36 QB hurries. And then one of his best games was that national championship versus Bama. 7 pressures. So he's 272, but the way he could outrun guys, we saw 4.51 in the 40 at 272 is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, that's scary. If I'm a running back or quarterback, I'm scared for my life if that guy's running for me right there. He was one of the best tacklers on the team. I mean, he doesn't miss tacklers because he has that speed and the size and the reach to get guys, and once he gets you, you're going down.
J.C. Shelton is super colorful, right? All right, we need some sauce on this meal. Sauce Gardner, you want to hear about him. For the Cincinnati Bearcats, the talented corner, very high draft choice prospect, Justin Williams, who covers the Bearcats for The Athletic, on Sauce Gardner.
He didn't allow a single touchdown pass in coverage at Cincinnati over his 3 years. And a reporter asked him at the combine, like, what are you going to do, you know, when you give one up in the NFL, a touchdown? And his response was, I don't plan on giving one up. And like that, you know, that encapsulates Sauce in the sense that he totally believes in himself. He has that confidence and that swag, but he also has the work ethic and kind of the personality traits to back all that up. It's hard to say that he gambles. I remember the defensive coordinator for Cincinnati, Mike Tressel, talking about how instinctive he is. You know, he had an interception at Notre Dame in the red zone, not because like it wasn't where he was supposed to be on the play, but he just kind of understood, all right, based on the formation and the way Notre Dame's lining up here, I know where this pass is going to go.
From the sound of all these writers and reporters who cover these prospects, it sounds like Nick Caserio has some good choices, tough choices to make, and that's a luxury problem, really. Let's get to some more after the break here, including Jordan Davis, Garrett Wilson, and some others on Texans Radio. Right back to it here on Texans Radio, getting to reporters who have covered the top prospects in the draft, and Jordan Davis is one of them. We've already done a ton, by the way, so if you've just joined us, you can go back to the app later and hear this show again. But Jordan Davis, J.C. Shelton, we heard from him previously from UGA Wire and UGA Football Live podcast talking about Trayvon Walker. Well, what does he have to say about Jordan Davis, who's the size of a vending machine? I mean, this guy is unbelievably big and fast.
340, 6'6", he can take up double teams all day, right? In the run game, he's one of the best run stoppers in the SEC the last two seasons. We saw him run down running backs from across the field a couple of times. One time he was clocked over 20 miles an hour, and that was incredible as a 300, you know, playing at around 350 during the season. It's an incredible story, to be honest with you, because a 3-star recruit, people forget that. So humble beginnings for Jordan. You're a 3-star recruit coming into Georgia, and a Georgia defense that's loaded year to year with 4-star, 5-star guys, blue chip guys. And he, from day one, I mean, he's a freshman All-American, SEC All-American as well.
There's J.C. Shelton on Jordan Davis. And what did I put in my Vandermock at pick number 13? Anybody from Georgia. All right, Garrett Wilson. There's some rumors out there that the Texans might be interested in him. There are also rumors that the Texans are interested in player A, B, C, D, all of them, okay? This is the draft. Don't believe everything you read. Just tune in Sunday, 7 o'clock, right here. Here's Phil Harrison, who writes for Buckeye Wire and USA Today Sports, on the receiver, Garrett Wilson.
More than anybody I think I've seen at Ohio State, he's fast, but he also has the ability to go up in traffic. He has really good body control and really good hands. I mean, he'll go over top of guys that are taller than him and be able to bring balls down. He's done it time and time again with big plays in his career at Ohio State. You know, I don't know that he's going to jump in his rookie season and be a number one, maybe a number one guy. I think eventually he will be. But I do think in the NFL, even though you can use him on the outside or the inside, I think the inside makes a lot of sense just because of his ability to create mismatches over the middle and separate and get the ball and then make plays after the catch. And Garrett Wilson will tell you flat out, Chris Olave is faster than I am, even though he had a little bit faster time in the NFL Combine. So to me, he's the more polished right now ready guy when he's coming out of college. But Wilson has, in my opinion, the bigger upside.
Interesting stuff there on Garrett Wilson, the receiver from Ohio State. Now, another tackle, Charles Cross. You've heard some about him. He's not going to go that high, but hey, you never know. Chrissy Freud covers Mississippi State for Sports Illustrated's Cowbell Corner. She's the lead editor there, and she explains Cross's nickname and why he's a high prospect in this year's NFL draft.
Well, they nicknamed him Sweet Feet because his footwork is so good. That's an area that he's really solid in. I think that's something that's really important, especially at the next level when you're going up against these really talented edge rushers who can change direction on you. I think his athleticism is probably the thing that you hear the most about, because you can't be an offensive lineman in the air raid without athleticism. I think it's important to note that Charles Cross committed to Mississippi State in 2018 and his true freshman season was in 2019. So you'll notice that that's when Joe Moorhead was here. And that's someone who ran the ball a lot, used the quarterback power run quite a bit, really utilized his running backs. They had Kylan Hill here. And so this wasn't a team that passed the ball much and really did not do well through the air at all. So that's what Charles Cross was recruited to come do. So that means they saw him as a good run blocker, and he was actually praised for his abilities as a run blocker in high school. But then whenever he starts to take off is when Mike Leach gets here and he's doing a lot more in pass protection. So I think really you have with him a much more well-rounded player than people realize, that is not only versatile, but that could possibly be equally as good in run blocking as he is in pass blocking.
And there's one of those sound bites that doesn't end that well, but that was good stuff from Chrissy Freud. Thanks very much to Dibby Sidhu, who put all of that together, did all those interviews, which you've been hearing here on Texans All Access. But we got the money quotes from the money prospects in the draft. We got a couple of others that maybe we can get to before the draft on Thursday night. 6 o'clock, we'll be live from Miller Outdoor Theater. A bunch of different guests. They're going to bring out the 5 rookies to the stage at Miller Outdoor Theater, so we'll get at least a couple of those guys on the show leading up to the draft, which starts at 7. The big highlight, of course, Johnny Harris, every hour of draft coverage, Thursday through Saturday night. Andre Ware joins us Thursday night to kick it off. Want to thank everyone for listening to the show tonight. Thank you, Austin, for producing. Have a great evening, everyone, and go Texans!